impaired. Hello, this is Tyler Bennis for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Essence. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence Magazine. The Tyler Perry Atlanta TSA gift card debacle explained. We tapped travel expert Caleb Harmon Marshall to clarify why the media mogul's $250,000 blessing to unpaid ATL workers was almost backfiring. And this article is by Bridget Bartlett Royal. No good deed goes unpunished. That was the sentiment of many after learning that 250 gift cards, each with a value of $1,000, which Tyler Perry generously gave transportation service agency employees in Atlanta, had to be returned. The entire ordeal that seemingly has more twists and turns than your granny's favorite soap opera all began back on March 27th. The billionaire actor, filmmaker, and television producer wanted to help those TSA workers at Hartsfield-Jackson Atlanta International Airport who had not been receiving their normal paychecks. According to CNN, roughly 61,000 TSA employees had been working without pay since funding for the Department of Homeland Security had lapsed on February 14th. This prompted a partial government shutdown. The employees collectively missed more than $1 billion in pay. The shutdown made it extremely challenging for a significant number of TSA staff to afford essentials like childcare, food, gas, and housing for themselves and their families in an already grim economy. Perry, who owns the colossal Tyler Perry Studios in the heart of Atlanta, initially attempted to help those in his area impacted by this unfortunate circumstances another way. The first time he arrived in the morning with $100,000 in cash, he wanted to give it directly to the TSA officers, says aviation security expert Caleb Harmon Marshall of Gate Access. Based in Atlanta, Harmon Marshall worked as a TSA officer for nearly a decade before leaving to launch his own platform to raise awareness and offer the general public insider insight into issues such as these. He met with local leadership at the airport and was instructed that he could not give cash directly to TSA officers because of ethics violations and gifting rules. He continues, Perry and his team pivoted to follow protocol and quickly arrived at what seemed like a great solution. On a second date, members of Perry's team returned with gift cards for TSA officers. They had 250 gift cards in the amount of $1,000 each. The employees were grateful and excited because they weren't getting paid, Harmon Marshall explains. I want to be clear. Perry went through all the proper channels, notes Harmon Marshall. The Gate Access founder reports that, according to his insider sources, only the PM shift received the gift cards. This allegedly, in turn, made some members of the AM workforce feel slighted, and thus complaints were made internally. Soon after, claims were flying around about the gift cards needing to be returned. This all, of course, led to anger, disappointment, and confusion. Senior management informed me that the decision was made to request the gift cards be returned because they weren't distributed in a fair manner. If there weren't enough for the entire workforce, which is over 1,000 people in Atlanta, they should have been distributed randomly, says Harmon Marshall. Questions quickly arose as the news spread like wildfire. What if people had already used the gift cards to buy items like gas, which could not be returned? What about those who needed to feed hungry children or buy diapers? Most of them had already spent it, says Harmon Marshall. You can't get blood from a turnip, some wise person once said, but you can sometimes get positive results from viral and public outrage. Fast forward to Tuesday, March 31st. A spokesperson from Perry's camp gave an update to a local Atlanta television outlet, News 11 Alive, that the officers are now going to be able to keep the gift cards without repercussions. According to News 11 Alive, a Perry rep says that they have official documentation as of March 31st from the DHS TSA legal team stating that the situation is now resolved and everything is fine. So, TSA officers, many of whom were facing eviction and were unable to afford food while helping to keep us safe while we're flying the sometimes not so friendly skies, are able to enjoy the lifeline they were selflessly sent. Also, many of the officers are now beginning to receive the long-awaited back pay, albeit with serious concerns about the process since, according to Harmon Marshall, paychecks are being taxed much more than normal due to the lump sum values. Despite the roller coaster ride, this situation has been for all parties involved. There appears to be a glimmer of light at the end of the perplexing tunnel. Bottom line, crossing every T and dotting every I is essential in everything involving money, especially $250,000. It's even more important to do so if you're trying to give away money when you're Black to people who are likely also Black. In this case, it seems as though Perry did, in fact, attempt to follow proper protocols. Regardless, we are relieved the gesture benefited hardworking staffers who still need to make ends meet during the government shutdown. Despite the confusion about their gift cards being returned, we also commend Perry for his philanthropic efforts, and we salute all those TSA workers who were financially impacted by the shutdown yet continued to show up for work. Whether there's a government shutdown in place or not, we are all blessed to be a blessing. All right, next, go inside one of Britain's only Black-owned boutique hotels. Sama Trinder took over her parents' struggling bed and breakfast at just 22 and turned it into a hub for sustainability, wellness, and community. And this article is by Kayla Brock. At just age 22, Sama Trinder took over her parents' rundown bed and breakfast in Richmond, a town in southwest London. But the legacy began in 1984 when her English father, Bill Trinder, and Kenyan mother, Ruth, purchased a set of struggling townhouses. They were once a literary hub in the late 19th and early 20th centuries, home to the poets and lovers Edith Cooper and Catherine Bradley, who wrote under the pseudonym Michael Field. At that time, the B&B was 12 ramshackle bedrooms. It was losing money, Sama recalls. Growing up, her parents also owned a chain of nursing homes, which is often discussed during mealtimes. In many ways, she was being initiated into the very foundations of hospitality long before she realized it. My parents were always working. They often went and stayed in hotels, and they always took me with them, she says. So I would just be taking in the details. Where did they get the plates from? In 2001, Sama transformed the B&B into a boutique hotel and later a members club, becoming the UK's only Black female-owned hotel and members club. Under her guidance, the hotel became one of the first B Corp accredited hotels in the UK in 2024. Today, nestled along the banks of the River Thames and a winner of the Marie Claire Sustainability Award, Bingham River House is a cherished wellness haven committed to community and sustainability. In earlier years, there's a quiet instinct to downplay the hotel's Black ownership. It was never really talked about, she says. My mom was almost like, let's not say it, you know. We didn't even want to bring attention to it. Beneath that silence was the reality of navigating an industry where representation was rare. When Sama took over the hotel at 22, an age when most are still figuring out where life might lead, she wasn't expecting it to be her reality. I sort of thought I was going to be a journalist, actually. I loved English, I loved writing, and that was always my dream, to be a journalist, she reminisces. With that career pivot, the early years were less about vision and more about survival, learning the rhythms of hospitality, understanding guests, and navigating uncertainty, and building something sustainable from the ground up. But over time, the Bingham River House began to transform, shaped by Sama's growing belief that hotels could be more than places to stay. In 2020, she decided to transform the hotel into a certified B Corp, a designation awarded to businesses that meet rigorous standards of social and environmental responsibility. It took us like 3 years, she recalls. Changes were implemented, including volunteer days for the team, supplier changes, relaunching the restaurant, and going zero plastic. There are a lot of people jumping on the sustainability green bandwagon, but you have to have your eyes open. Just because something says it's green or sustainable is not always, she said. Bingham is not defined solely by sustainability. Taking over a family business at such a young age meant navigating expectations, financial pressures, and responsibility long before most of Sama's peers faced similar challenges. I took everything very personally, she says. I would get very, very stressed. I hate having complaints, and because we were changing, we were going from B&B to faulty towers to making a luxury boutique hotel. Over time, she began to center her vision on wellness and community, adding a membership club. It just makes sense to create a place where our local community can come, connect, meet each other, and work, she says. For Sama, creating this atmosphere has never been about perfection. It has been about authenticity and building a place that reflects her values and invites others to pause, reflect, and feel at ease. That sense of purpose extends beyond the walls of Bingham. Representation, once something quietly downplayed, has become part of a broader mission. We need to see more of us, she says, people of color and women, all genders, owning and operating businesses. Bingham Riverhouse is a destination that reflects its owner's belief that hospitality can nurture, inspire, and foster a sense of belonging. Under Sama's guidance, it has become a home for travelers seeking more than a stay and a space for connection, community, and thoughtful experiences. Here, luxury and sustainability coexist, serving as a gentle reminder of intention and perseverance. The Ultimate Music Lover's Guide to a Nashville Weekend. From vinyl suites to brunch biscuits, 12 South boutiques to black music history, this is your ultimate itinerary for a weekend in Nashville. This article is by Shelby Stewart. The second my plane touched down at BNA, I knew this trip would be different. Nashville announces itself not with flashing lights or the bustling chaos of a tourist city, but with the warmth, rhythm, and kind of energy that seems to pulse through the streets. Music seeps from every corner, R&B spilling out of record shops, country notes drifting from honky-tonks, and yet the city never feels overwhelming. Instead, it feels like a welcome hug. My first stop was the Noel Hotel, a downtown boutique gem that perfectly mirrors Nashville itself. Sophisticated, artistic, and playful. The lobby is airy and bright, with a split between a coffee shop and a lobby shop, adorned with contemporary decor, but the real magic lies in its rooms, specifically the Ryman Vinyl Suite. Walking into the suite is like stepping into the private archive of a lifelong Nashville music devotee. A kaleidoscope of vintage concert posters, archival photographs of legends like Dolly Parton, Johnny Cash, and Minnie Pearl, and a Washburn guitar crafted from the Ryman's original oak pews, signed by B.B. King, announced that this is a space curated for the music lovers. Custom stained glass windows echo the Ryman Auditorium, casting a warm, ever-shifting glow that feels both sacred and celebratory. The suite is a full sensory experience. A listening lounge invites you to pick from over 100 vinyl records, from gospel and R&B to country and blues, and play them on a vintage Crosley record player or a retro gramophone. You can feel the grooves beneath your fingertips, hear the subtle crackle of analog sound, and let the music fill the space. Plush seating encourages conversation or reflection, while subtle nods to Nashville's past, like performance photographs and pennant flags, surround you. The decor blends retro elegance with modern comfort. Soft lighting, velvet textures, and carefully curated knickknacks create a space that's both intimate and playful. Whether you're spinning records with your girls or sipping cocktails in the glow of the stained glass, the Ryman Vinyl Suite turns a hotel stay into an immersive musical journey. After settling in, I made myself my way to 12 South, one of Nashville's most walkable neighborhoods, and a perfect introduction to the city's local flavor. Brunch at Buttermilk Ranch offered sunny interiors, biscuits that can only be described as pillowy perfection, and Southern classics elevated just enough to feel special. One thing I quickly noticed, Nashville does brunch better than most cities, and you can simply just not go wrong with biscuits and gravy at any table. The charm of 12 South doesn't end at brunch. Small mercantiles line the streets, each bursting with local personality. At Serendipity, I picked up enamel pins that read, "Y'all, and your cornbread ain't done in the middle." Tiny souvenirs that capture the city's country humor and warmth. As a native Texan, I could find some familiarity. Other boutiques brimmed with handmade jewelry, artisanal candles, and curated home goods, making every shop a discovery and every purchase a story. Strolling these streets, I felt fully immersed in the neighborhood's character, casual, creative, and undeniably welcoming. And while honky-tonks and cowboy boots dominate the tourist gaze, take it from a Texan. Most of the full cowboy ensembles are visitors, not locals. Here you'll find that the city's true style is a mix of Southern charm and effortless cool, without the need for pageantry, as Texans live by. The afternoon was reserved for the Museum of African American Music, a must for any music lover's trip focused on culture. The museum's exhibitions trace black music from its roots and spirituals to gospel, blues, jazz, R&B, hip-hop, and contemporary pop. However, experience goes beyond history. It's interactive, engaging, and deeply personal. Touch instruments, listen to immersive audio stations, and explore stories of resilience, creativity, and innovation. The staff also provide curated lists of Black-owned businesses and local creative spaces to visit, making it easy to continue the journey beyond the museum walls. Walking through the galleries, I felt the city's heartbeat, a history rooted in Black artistry, community, and entrepreneurship, layered seamlessly into the contemporary cultural landscape. Evening brought a new flavor of the city. Dinner at Iggy's restaurant, where Italian classics are served with a southern touch, offered a moment to relax and get full before taking on the town. My Rex, try the ricotta tortellini or the rigatoni bolognese. You won't leave dissatisfied. On a full belly, I headed to Rudy's Jazz Club, tucked away yet alive with energy. Filled the room with rich, soulful sounds. The red beans and rice and a bowl of gumbo were comforting in a way that felt deeply Southern, courtesy of one of the owners who hails from the Big Easy. While the music seemed to rise from the walls themselves, wrapping the audience in the city's warmth. Later, cocktails at 888, a speakeasy sushi bar with a vinyl lounge, combined playful sophistication with intimate ambiance, a space perfect for late-night conversations with your girls or a quiet toast to the weekend ahead. Saturday began with brunch at Audrey in East Nashville, where elevated Appalachian-inspired cuisine paired beautifully with sunlight-drenched interiors. The city has a way of making even the simple things feel special, whether it's the balance of flavors in a sweet potato pancake or the perfect pour of coffee at a neighborhood cafe. After brunch, I abided by my core solo travel rule, finding a record shop in the city to explore the town's taste in music. Nashville being heralded as a music city, I knew I was in for a treat and couldn't wait to dive into their offerings. That curiosity led me to Grimey's, the city's coveted record shop and bookstore that feels like a treasure trove for music lovers. Walking in, the scent of vinyl and well-loved pages greets you, and shelves are stacked with records spanning every genre imaginable, from modern-day hip-hop icons like Larry June to funk legends like James Brown to contemporary R&B royalty Beyoncé and Solange. I couldn't resist indulging, flipping through the grooves of old favorites while discovering new gems. Of course, I had to pick up a keepsake, George Clinton's memoir, a piece of music history to bring home alongside memories of the city. Grimey's is a cultural archive, a place where music, stories, and community intersect, perfectly capturing the soul of Music City. Not long after, I wandered murals and galleries tucked along quiet streets, letting the city guide me. Later, I visited the Museum of Gospel Music to dive deeper into the contributions from artists across the genre and getting to see how God and country are intrinsically linked. These exhibits make you pause and reflect, deepening your appreciation for the city's cultural layers. And as much as locals and tourists alike may love a good hoedown, they also make time for church, too. And as an added bonus, you can record yourself singing some of your favorite gospel songs in a recording booth at the museum, too. God knows my heart, so there's no evidence of my singing voice. Saturday evening brought a mix of culinary delight and nightlife. Dinner at Lona inside the Noel balanced sophistication with approachable charm, while the cocktails at 888 reminded me why Nashville is as much about experience as it is about food or music. Walking back through downtown, the city felt alive in a way that was simultaneously intimate and electric. Music spilled from bars, the aroma of barbecue lingered in the streets, and every passerby seemed infused with friendliness that made me feel welcome in a way few cities manage. Sunday called for one final indulgence, lunch at Martin's Barbecue downtown. The smoky aroma greeted me long before I reached the door, and the hearty plates of pulled pork, brisket, and tangy sides were a comforting conclusion to the weekend. By the time I left, the city's rhythm had settled into me. The warmth of its people, the artistry of its music, the charm of its streets, and the depth of its cultural history. Nashville is not just a city you visit, it's one you experience. For Black women planning a girls' trip, it offers a weekend of indulgence, discovery, and connection. Stay at the Noel and step into the Ryman Vinyl Suite for a living museum of music. Explore 12 South, savoring both brunch and boutique treasures. Immerse yourself in the Museum of African American Music. And end your nights with live jazz, cocktails, and laughter that echoes through the city streets. Nashville isn't just a destination, it's a celebration, a classroom, and a home, all rolled into one. By the time you'll leave, you'll already be dreaming of your next weekend in Music City. What a snowboarding first-timer learned about rest, recovery, and mountain life in Park City. And this article is by Kimberly Wilson. I'm a July-born Cancer, so I probably don't have to tell you that I'm a beach person by default. In fact, I'm one of those warm weather travelers who packs sunscreen before she packs anything else. The Bahamas, Turks and Caicos, Bermuda, those are my people. So when the opportunity came to spend a few days in Canyons Village in Park City, Utah, as part of a winter wellness experience hosted with Oura Ring, I said yes before I could talk myself out of it. Because if I thought about it too hard, did I really want to suffer in the cold and snow with the weather we've already been experiencing on the East Coast? I almost saw it as a sign when I missed my first flight, but thankfully it was an easy rebook, and I only landed one day late. And I'm glad I did, because what I found there had nothing to do with what I thought I was signing up for, and everything to do with what I apparently needed. Park City has a way of doing that to people, apparently. It's been pulling people in since the 1860s when it was a silver mining town, and by 2002 it was hosting events for the Salt Lake City Winter Olympics. My home base was the Pendry Park City, a ski-in, ski-out luxury hotel sitting right at the center of the village, and the moment I walked into my room, I saw the mountain sitting right outside the window. I understood why people plan trips around this place every single year. The property has multiple dining rooms, a rooftop pool, and a full-service spa, and as someone who came in lukewarm on the whole mountain experience, the hotel did a lot of the convincing before I even got on the slopes. I had never snowboarded before. My girlfriend who came with me had never snowboarded before either, which in retrospect was the best possible circumstance, because we were equally clueless and equally committed to not letting the other one quit. We picked up our gear from Canyon Mountain Rentals, a short walk from Pendry, met our instructor, and headed out. What followed was 3 hours of falling, getting back up, falling again, and genuinely enjoying what it feels like to be a learner again. By the time we came off the mountain that afternoon, I had a whole new respect for the people who do this every single winter, because how sway. That said, if you're already mentally booking flights, there's something worth knowing going in. Snow conditions in Park City have shifted in recent years, and climate change is a big factor in that. It did not make the trip any less worthwhile, but I think it's worth being honest about what you might find when you get there versus what the photos have always shown. Your body keeps score even when you are not. Part of the experience was being introduced to Oura Ring, the wearable health tech company whose rings track sleep quality, heart rate variability, and a daily readiness score that reflects how your body is actually doing versus how you think you're doing. I wore it on my last day, mostly out of curiosity, and the data gave me more context than I expected. There was nothing dramatic, because Park City's altitude is manageable and I felt fine the whole trip, but seeing my actual recovery numbers after 2 days of physical activity I was not used to made me think differently about how I approach rest, not just on trips, but in general. The village itself made the slower parts of the trip just as satisfying as the mountain day, which honestly surprised me. Canyons Village is walkable in a way that mountain resorts often are not, with shops, restaurants, and open gathering spaces that feel like an actual community. I had a free morning one day just to wander, and I used every minute of it. The afternoon, we got an opportunity to ride the Sunrise Gondola, a 10-passenger cabin that gives you a proper look at the full scale of the mountain from above. As someone experiencing all of this for the first time, that view alone was worth the trip up. What surprised me most about Canyons Village is how much there is to do when you're not on the mountain. The gondola art stroll is a good example of that, and the fact that I never got to check it out is one of my own personal regrets of the trip. Red Tail Grill, on the other hand, I did make it to, and it's at the slope side of the base of the Orange Bubble Express lift with outdoor deck seating and food that was exactly what I needed after a morning on the mountain. Nothing fussy, but it was just really good. The signature massage at the Waldorf Astoria Spa, after all of that, was not optional. Those were 60 minutes that my body genuinely needed after 2 days of altitude, snowboarding, and walking around the village. The spa has steam rooms, an outdoor sauna, a pool, and whirlpools, and your treatment comes with a full day pass so you can use the facilities as long as you want. The food kept surprising me because I fully expected mountain resort food and got something much better, so I want to give it its proper credit. Dinner at Powder inside the Waldorf Astoria was divine, with its menu reflecting mountain cuisine that had been built around the region's seasonal ingredients. The closing dinner at Scala Provisions Company inside the Hyatt-centric Park City was the perfect bookend to the trip, with locally sourced food and craft cocktails. The rooftop après-ski at Pendry deserves its own mention because the poolside champagne with an unobstructed view of the mountain is an experience that does not need anything else added to it to be exactly right. Park City is for everybody, including people who thought it wasn't for them. I came home with sore legs, better sleep data than I expected, and a new understanding of what my body is capable of when I actually give it what it needs to recover. The Aura data kept me honest about what my body needed, and Canyons Village taught me that rest is not what you do when the fun is over. It's part of the fun, and I had been doing vacation wrong for a long time. I still would not call myself a mountain person, but I understand now how people become one. And if I go back to Park City, I am absolutely signing up for another lesson. But this time I already know to build in the spa day, drink the water, and actually let my body catch up. We have run out of time for today's episode of Essence. We hoped you enjoyed listening. Please join us next time. I'm Tyra Banks, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Essence is available as a podcast at our website, NorthCarolinaReadingService.org, and that is NCReadingService.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.